Welcome to the Unshakable Habits Podcast, where we help you to build the habits and routines that help build the life you want so you can turn everyday actions into powerful wins for your health, mindset, relationships, faith, and professional growth. I am your host, Stephen Box. I am joined today by Damian Andrews. Damian, welcome.
Pleasure to be here, Stephen.
Damian, I had an opportunity to be on your podcast, the What is Manly podcast, and we had a really great conversation. So I'm looking forward to continuing some of that today. I know that our themes are very similar because you have this idea of life shouldn't really be difficult. We make it difficult. So talk to me a little bit about where did this philosophy come from?
I'd like to think that I invented it because I like to think I invented a lot of things. But in reality, we're just repeating what's out there. And I think it was Michelangelo said that good artists create, great artists steal. And the philosophy from as far as I can date comes from Confucius, who said life is very simple, but we insist on complicating it. And to that end, I use the analogy of being wealthy. It's something that a lot of people chase. They want money. And if you follow the principles, there's a book called The Richest Man in Babylon. You follow the principles in that. You keep a bit of what you earn. You invest that wisely, and then you reinvest the income. It's not a question of whether you will be wealthy. It will be the outcome. And it's that principle that applies, not that principle, but that overarching principle applies in life. There are a lot of simple things. If you want a happy relationship, know who you are, be a kind person, and date someone that's kind and fits with what you want. Follow that principle, you'll have a wonderful relationship. And I have lots of friends that have that. I didn't have that knowledge many years ago, so I've had some terrible relationships in my past. And I must, if I'm going to be honest, I probably contributed to that as well. There's certain behaviors that I had that weren't great. And that's where that principle comes in. Again, I was complicating it, making it difficult rather than and then making it simple and easy.
So where do you think that this instinct, we'll call it, to complicate things, where do you think it comes from?
I think it's learned. And there are people in that go through the life that have things that go very smoothly. And part of that is their upbringing, what they're taught. And we're all shaped by the beliefs that we have instilled upon us. And then we continue to instill upon us, as you said, as a habit, we instill these beliefs. A belief is just a thought that you've repeated over and over again. And when we come to that realization and say, hey, actually what I believe isn't real, it's not my reality. And I know that's got very distorted today with the woke mentality, and my identity is shaped by all this stuff around me rather than it's just a behavior. When we step back and go, hey, my behaviors are just that. They're not me. I'm this ball of wonderfulness, energy, whatever it is, but my identity is not my behavior. It's not my beliefs. They're just something that's been instilled. And from that, then we can actually make that change. And certain people have that. They were brought up with that. Other people weren't. I certainly wasn't. But it's something that I learned. And now I found one of the things I implemented in business worked really well. And I call it the no excuse policy. And what I would do is when we had meetings, everyone would have a task that they had to do before the next meeting, and they set their own task as well. We had overall objectives in the big process, and I get people to set their own task and come back the next meeting and deliver that task. The no excuse policy was if you didn't do the task, you couldn't give an excuse. It was no blame. It wasn't, oh, you bad person for not doing the task. Mm-hmm. It was, all you could say was, I didn't do it, or I didn't get it done. And it was really fascinating, the accountability, how high the accountability went for people when they couldn't give an excuse. They couldn't say, oh, I didn't do it because of this, or the cat ate my homework, or whatever it was. Yeah. And then I thought about that. I thought, what if I apply that in my own life?
Yeah.
If I set myself something or something happens in my life, I can't give an excuse for the shitty shit that happens. Mm-hmm. And what that did was it transformed how I approached things, because there was no excuse. It was, okay, it didn't happen. What do I do now? Do I really want this? And that made a really big shift in how things happen for me. Yeah. And things happened a lot faster, a lot easier, because I wasn't putting up a roadblock, which is all an excuse is. It's a roadblock. You're just justifying why you didn't do it.
Yeah.
If I couldn't justify it anymore, all of a sudden it became on me to fix it. And I did. And it was amazing how many other things just opened up when you take into account how your reticular activating system works. There were so many opportunities that were always right in front of me that actually I now saw and was able to tap into and get things done. And an example being this morning before we it's morning for me and evening for you, but just before we had the jumped on this podcast, there's a few things that I need to do for a next phase of my consulting business and working with businesses, and these little flyers that I'm making promoting different things. And rather than, you know, fluffing around, I just jumped on and I actually completed a complete another flyer for one of the programs that my consulting firm offers.
Yeah.
It happened really quickly, really fast. I had no idea when I started how it was going to work or what to do. But then all of a sudden, before we start, it's finished, done, and I've sent it off to my business development manager so she can push that forward.
Yeah. Man, there's so much to unpack there, right? You just
you say that a lot when we can talk.
So let's actually back this up a little bit and let's break down some of this. A lot of what people are experiencing when it comes to making things difficult or feeling like things are difficult is it's learned behaviors, right? Yeah. And maybe that's something from when you were a kid, or maybe you're a victim of marketing, because let's be honest, every single person out there that markets now, they make it seem that the process needs to be this like super overly complicated thing. Well, you feel like you have to hire them, right?
Well, that's right. I said, I want to call out that word victim, because that victim mentality, I think, is what makes life complicated, because we're putting blame somewhere else. And we say, oh, it's marketing society. No, you don't have to. You don't have to turn on the telly. You don't have to watch all those ads. And that was a major shift. Mm-hmm. Quietening of the mind makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And how I did this, it was about 8 years ago. I turned off all the dings and blings and all the notifications on all my devices. So I don't know. I don't even know if my phone, unless I'm actually looking at it, because the phone lights up if you're looking at it. But unless I'm looking at my phone, I won't know that it's rang, that I've got a text message, that I've got a social media message, and same on my computer, even to the extent where you look at your email, the little icon on the email that you have, it has a number of unread messages. I turned that off, so I don't know if I've got unread messages. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting how much that quietened my mind so that I was able to focus on things that were important. And that's why I don't like when we say, oh, we're subjected to this, to media and ads and influence that way. Yes, they certainly influence us, but we don't have to watch them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's a good distinction, right? Because the reality is, this is the what gets put out there. People overly complicate things, especially in my industry, right? The health and wellness industry is full of absolute nonsense where people make it seem you have to follow a complicated diet. You have to follow some extremely difficult workout program and do all these complex movement patterns. Like, no, you really don't. But it's like you said, the thing is, when people don't know any better, it's very difficult for them to figure out what's real and what's not. And the reality is, you can make a choice to say, you know what, I'm going to block all the nonsense out, and I'm going to stop listening to people who want to make it seem like things need to be complicated. You can make that decision.
Well, that's where neuroscience comes in, because there's a difference in how your brain works, especially with dopamine and serotonin. And what happens, and you mentioned about the complicated exercise routines and diets, what happens with external things? And I liken it to video games. And we all remember little Mario that used to jump around, you get the gold coin. And every time you got a gold coin, you get a dopamine hit. So you want to chase that. But what happens after that, when you're dealing with external things, that your baseline for that same satisfaction increases. So as you get the gold coin, all of a sudden that same gold coin's next gold coin is not going to give you the same dopamine hit.
Right.
And that's why you find video games are designed to have more and ever increasing challenges, because your dopamine level in respect of that goes up and up to the point where you finally get really bored with it and you need to go on with something else.
Yeah.
That happens with external things. The exception to that, and a friend of mine is a neuroscientist, explained this to me, is in our connection with other people. That baseline doesn't increase. So when you say I love you to your partner, and then 20 years later you say I love you, the baseline hasn't moved. For whatever reason, when we connect with other people, our baseline for dopamine doesn't change. And when we recognize that, we can say, okay, what's happening here? How am I connecting with this? And when you look at, for example, the exercise routines, am I focusing on just the external exercise, which means over time I'm going to get bored with this and need a new exercise, which is why you have all these new and more complicated things? Or am I focusing on my relationship with myself while doing the exercise? Because the same principle applies as when you say I love you to your partner, is when you say I love you to yourself, that dopamine hit stays the same. The baseline doesn't move. And if you make the doing the diet or doing the exercise about your relationship with you, all of a sudden it becomes just as satisfying doing the same routine every day. And that's what I do. I have an exercise routine, very basic core strength exercise, a little bit of mobility fitness in there as well. And I do that most days. And then I jump on the cross trainer and do that. And I get the same sense of satisfaction every day because I understand this is how dopamine works within my body. So it's not about the exercise itself. It's about my relationship with the exercise. And when you make that shift, all of a sudden you don't need these newer and fancier things. They're nice to have, but it's not something that creates a need that you have to have.
And a lot of the things that are maybe of value, some of the more complicated things that actually do have some value, what people miss is that most of the time, those things are only valuable in the later stages. They're only if you're trying to get to the very top levels do those things start to become relevant. That you don't need any of that stuff when you start off. You just need the simple stuff.
It's very true. I remember when I one time went skiing in Switzerland, and I was quite large then. I think I weighed about 110 kilos. Which for me, I'm 6 foot, so I wasn't really fat, but I was a little bit chubby.
Yeah.
And I noticed as I was skiing, by the time we got to lunchtime, my legs were killing me. They were burning so much because I was carrying so much weight.
Yeah.
12 months later, we went back. Now, in that 12 months, I hadn't really exercised much. Certainly hadn't done anything strenuous. All I did was I limited the amount of food that I ate, and not in a painful way either. I ate to the point where I was satisfied and I stopped, rather than going, oh, this is really tasty and keep eating. Mm-hmm. And I dropped something like 25 kilos. It wasn't quick, but it was between that time and the following year when we were again skiing in Switzerland, I was 25 kilos lighter and I hadn't exercised or anything. And I noticed I could ski all day and it was fine. But it was really just that simple shift of going, hey, I'm not going to eat as much, and just making a slight shift, going, I'm full, I'm satisfied, and leaving that rather than keeping stuffing food into my mouth.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. You brought up earlier this idea about identity. And I think it's a great tie-in here because a lot of what you're talking about right now is about how you identify. It's about how you think of yourself. If I tell myself I'm going to eat less food because I don't really need to eat past the point of satisfaction, then you are basically saying you are someone who has discipline. You are someone who understands that you don't need to overeat. There's nothing that you're compensating for. You feel more confident in yourself. It's easy to do that. Versus if you say, I'm going to eat less food so that I can lose weight, then you're more likely to eat too little food, to be miserable, to be hungry, and it's going to be much more difficult to stick with that. So it's that simple identity shift of, I'm not doing this for any other reason than I just recognize that I'm eating more food than I need, and I'm just going to eat only what I need, versus I have to eat a certain amount so I can lose weight.
Exactly. And that's a really good point that you raised there, particularly with how your mind works, your unconscious mind, and your reticular activating system. And we've all had that moment where we've lost something and we're looking through the house, we're looking everywhere, we look in ridiculous places like the freezer in the laundry that we've got. It's like, hey, why would it be there?
Yeah.
And then we give up and we relaxed and we walk past the bench in the kitchen and there it is sitting on the bench right in front of us.
Yeah.
Our mind sees, our reticular activating system filters what we see. And how it filters is what we focus on. Our mind doesn't know how to not do something. Our unconscious mind doesn't know how to do that. And we've heard that about how if I tell you not to think of a pink elephant, you have to think of the pink elephant.
Yeah.
And how that works in a practical application is if you say to yourself, I don't want to forget whatever it is, and you're halfway to wherever you need to be, and then you go, oh, shit, I forgot. And a simple shift by saying, I will remember before I leave.
Yeah.
So if you say that at the start of the day, I will remember to bring my speech notes before I leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a very specific thing in your unconscious mind. And I know from my experience where I do that, because I do that all the time, I'm about to walk out the door and all of a sudden it's, speech, or this, or, yeah, or whatever it is I've got to take. And I have those moments all the time where things just pop into my mind because I've set it up that way. And that's coming back to this principle of life is simple. If we set things up the right way,
yep,
if we focus on what it is we want, it's one of those questions. And I changed it a little bit because I got tired of asking people, what do you want? And they go, I don't know. And then I said, what do you choose?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden light bulbs went off and go, what? I have a choice. Exactly. You have a choice. You have the choice to create your mind the way it is. And linking that back again to the no excuse policy, yeah, all of a sudden you've got no one else to blame. So it's my mind. I can change the way I want to think about it. I'm not a victim of advertising, looking at all these other people and go, I've got to look like that or I've got to behave like that. I become my own person with my own identity that I choose to be the way I want it to be. And all of a sudden, you're creating your own path. And it reminds me of it was probably 20, 25 years, 30 years ago, 30 years ago now. That's how old I am. I'm getting ancient. But I had a quote on my desk that said, don't go where the path may lead. Go instead where there's no path and leave a trail. And that's how I believe you want to live your life, is you create your identity. And that, from a business perspective, from a partner perspective, if you are you, you're unique. You don't have any competition. All of a sudden, your whole stress level just drops dramatically because you don't have competition, because you are the only one of you. It's a unique selling proposition. Works fantastically in business. Just be you.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to go back to this no excuse thing that you're talking about, because one thing I find so interesting is when you talk to people and they're giving you their reason, and I'm using that word for a reason. I didn't realize what I was doing there. Okay, so a reason for a reason. Okay. It's just, that was funny that I just had that real time realization.
There's people that do speak good too.
But when they're giving you their reason, I'm putting this in air quotes, right? Their reason is because in their mind, it's not an excuse. It's a reason.
Yeah.
Right. To everybody else listening to it, it's an excuse.
But it is. It's a reason. It's a reason for not doing it.
Yeah.
And if you're focusing on your reasons for not doing it, you're going to not do it. And this is where we make that shift again, is what do I choose? I choose to get it done. So rather than saying, here are the reasons for not doing it, what can I do now to get there? And you shift that question and all of a sudden it opens up a whole new set of doors and you get there faster, smoother, easier. And again, life is simple if you want it to be.
I laugh at this because you just made me go back to a memory in my brain. And it's a difference in how I was 15, 20 years ago versus how I am today. 15, 20 years ago, I was working retail management, didn't really like my job. And I would routinely, if I was going to be running late to work, before I even got in the car to leave, I was already thinking of what my excuse was going to be for being late.
Yeah.
At no point did I ever start to think about, okay, I'm running a little behind this morning. What changes can I make? What can I cut out? What can I do differently this morning that's going to allow me to still get to work on time? I was thinking already about how I was going to give myself an excuse for being late. Versus now, I don't think about making excuses for things. I think about how do I accomplish what I'm trying to do. And it does help when you want to be there. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. What you've just outlined is a perfect metaphor for what I'm talking about. You're already, before you even got to where you wanted to be, you'd already set up reasons for why you weren't going to get there.
Yeah.
And we do that. People do that all the time. They come up with reasons. They have an idea of what they want. And then they'll come up with reasons for why they don't want to be there. And that links back to our evolution as well, unless you're a creationist. Let's go with evolution at the moment. And to survive, you had a higher chance of survival if you were part of the group. If you're outside of the group, you could have got eaten by a lion or attacked by some other tribe or something like that. So as part of the group, you had a greater chance of survival. And that's innate within us. Mm-hmm. And what now happens, though, is we've created a comfort zone, so to speak, where it's safe to be part of the group. And that really affects our ability to be our own unique self. Because if we're our own unique self, as much as it doesn't really matter, certainly in civilized societies, because you're not generally going to get some horde coming through and other tribes and things like that. Yeah. Certainly in your where you live and where I live, that's not going to happen as a general rule.
Yeah.
But we still feel that way. So we still feel that if we're ourselves, we're going to be all of a sudden outside of the group, mm-hmm. alone and vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so we stay within the group. So unconsciously, we're drawn to stay within the group. And that's where you're coming back to what you're asking about. Why do we not make life simple? As part of that simplicity is being our own unique self. And we're fighting against this evolution of wanting to be part of the crowd, mm-hmm. so that we don't stand out and we don't get eaten by a lion or like a school of fish, for example, where you want to be in the center so that you're less likely to get eaten by predators. But our world has evolved and our thinking needs to evolve that being our own unique self is actually an advantage, not a disadvantage now. And we can then lead that way by standing out, and other people will follow. Especially, and if you take into account, I think most of your viewers have probably seen the first follower video on YouTube. I've forgotten that. Some Shriver, I can't remember the guy's name. But look up first follower. Especially if we have in our ability to embrace the first follower. So if we're going in a direction as a leader and we're embracing the people that are actually supporting us and like where we're going, then all of a sudden we've got the crowd going with us anyway. But it's a crowd of people that are supportive and we're all moving the same direction. And then you can create that ebb and flow. And I love the story of, I think it was Nelson Mandela's father. When Nelson Mandela was growing up, his father was the leader of a tribe. And he would allow everyone else to speak first.
Yep.
So he'd go around the room and he would listen to everyone else before he spoke. Mm-hmm. And this is part of having that confidence within yourself. And we have a program called Fearless where we teach that, how to actually sit back and listen to everybody else without you feeling, oh, I don't have a place here. And it's interesting how when you can do that, when you can sit quietly and listen and just ask a couple of key questions, how much more power that gives you.
Yeah.
And that's part of that process of this evolution, I think, we need to go through. So we're actually becoming like the X-Men. We're actually evolving in society. We've come to a place, and I love, I was watching recently on the news, the former CEO of Google, I think it was, if memory, he's part of a task force. Now they're looking at how to prevent any land invasion ever happening again, especially with the advancement of drones, because you can have a swarms of drones to invade another country, as Russia recently did to Ukraine. They had a massive buildup of troops on the borders before, and that's clearly visible. Now with drone technology, you can have almost immediately swarms of drones there with munitions on them, that as soon as someone crosses a border, they're just going to be obliterated. And that's part of what they're working on. I know it's a defensive tactic, and ideally we would love to have a society where you don't need that, but we'll get there eventually. And so it's interesting how the world is evolving, how this collaborative approach is working, where we want to work together in a peaceful way so that we actually grow and innovate and make the world better for everybody. I love where we're headed.
Yeah, there's a couple of different examples I can really think of with something like this, right? Where, easy example, say you're at a party or a get-together, starting to die down, and you can tell that it's dying down, but nobody wants to leave. And then that first person leaves, right? and then what happens? Like, all of a sudden, within 5 minutes, half the party's gone, right? It's everybody was waiting on that first person to leave the room.
Exactly. It is that the mentality of that crowd mentality. And it's nice to be part of a crowd. Again, we're social creatures. We want to be part of a group and interact. And part of that, I believe, is coming back to that dopamine hit that we get. It's the same regardless of how many times we interact with a person. When we hang out with our best friend, we feel the same consistently. It's not like we have to up the ante as to how our relationship works.
Yeah.
You can hang around with you. I catch up with my friends and we play cards. And we play cards the same way, and it's the same thing. And we just enjoy each other's company. We don't have, our baseline hasn't moved. And that's where that socialness comes in. And same token too, it's having that space where we can be ourselves as well, recognizing that we can bring our uniqueness to that. And that actually adds value to the group, because you're bringing your uniqueness to the group. They're learning from it because everyone else is bringing their uniqueness. So you're learning from them as well. And you're, oh, that's something interesting. I can grow from that. But you can only grow, and this is the thing with learning, you can only learn if you let go of something.
Yep.
You can't hold on to your same way of who you are and learn something new. And that's where it's really important to have that ability to let go and allow that growth to happen and evolve. And as the principle of nature, if you're not growing, you're dying. So it's better to be growing.
Yeah. You talk about this idea of, in order to learn, you've got to be willing to let go of something. And I think this is one of those things where it is hard for people. When we talk about things being easy versus hard, this is a hard thing because you have learned certain things in your life. You have these beliefs, you have these stories that you've told yourself. There's all these things that went into the decisions that you've made, into the things that you've believed. And now all of a sudden somebody's presenting something that's in contrast to that. You really have to be able to, like you said, let go of that defensiveness of wanting to defend, of wanting to assume that everything you've learned to this point had to be right, because otherwise, why would you have believed it? And you got to be able to check your ego a little bit and go, hey, is it possible that maybe there was some information out there that I wasn't aware of when I developed these beliefs? And now that I have this new information, it's okay for me to actually change my opinion.
Definitely. And that's one of the key principles we teach in the program that I have called the Leader's Nucleus. There's four key principles. And one of those key principles that great leaders have is being a change master. It's being able to look at the environment that you're in and understanding that you need to change to suit the environment. And this is a principle from nature. When you look at nature and you look at all the species that have existed on the planet, 99.9% of all species that have existed are extinct. And the ones that do exist are the ones that are adapted to the environment that they're in. And this is something that's really important to understand as a, certainly as a leader, but even, and you are a leader regardless of where you are. If you've got children, you're a leader. If you've got a pet, you're a leader. We're all leaders in some context, is to understand that we need to be able to change to the environment, and the environment is constantly evolving. Trying to stop it evolve is just fraught. It's like trying to stop the wind. It's not going to happen. And that's where we need to adapt. We need to look at it and go, okay, how do I change to this circumstance? How do I adapt to this circumstance? And when you have that flexibility and recognizing that you are not your behaviors, this is that distinction. You don't get caught up in going, oh, but I'm this way. No, your beliefs are thoughts that you've just repeated over and over again. Well, you can change what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. And behaviors are patterns that you've learned. They're just habits. And having the ability to be relaxed and not stuck with reacting to the environment, again, turning the dings off your phone, you all of a sudden you're more relaxed. You're able to speak to your unconscious mind, because we don't act from our conscious mind. When you're picking up your cup of coffee, you're not thinking through every muscle that you're moving to pick that up. You consciously can't do it. We don't act from our conscious mind. We act from our unconscious. Right. And being able to be in that relaxed state, you can actually speak to your unconscious quite easily, make a shift. It can happen. And I've done it instantaneously at times where I've said, okay, I want to change this behavior. Yeah. And I've thought through it, relaxed, allowed it to sink in. All of a sudden, I'm behaving completely different in that same scenario, just stimulus and response. The stimulus came, the response was different because I changed how my unconscious thought. And that's part of being that change master we talked about and also we teach in the leader's nucleus. It's these four core principles that as a leader you need to embody, and you all great leaders from Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Gandhi, all those leaders had that within them. Mary Barra is another person. There's so many leaders that embody those four principles. But being able to be that change must be able to recognize that your behaviors, who you are, your identity is not made up by your behaviors and what you do. It's actually a core of you, which is, you can view it however you want. I think of it like a big ball of light, of energy, and from that we can do different things based on what we want to achieve.
Yeah, I like the idea that we're talking about identity here, because I feel that a lot of people, they get stuck on identity and behaviors. Mm-hmm. And if I have a certain identity, I have to take on certain behaviors. But then what you actually see in people is a lot of times their behaviors don't actually match the identity that they say they want to have. Look for the discrepancies, right?
It's a projected identity.
Yeah.
So that there's a thing that they want to project, and then there's what's really going on underneath. And that's where those behaviors then start to reveal, if you're paying attention, what's really is the identity. And that's the same with people as it is with companies as well, because I deal with a lot of organizations, and organizations have identity that if they're clear about it and they're purposeful about it, they can actually attract quality employees that fit with that identity. And the whole process of employee relationship with the organization, the customers, and the wider community becomes much more integrated and seamless and has a very distinct flow to it. Whereas other companies that I've worked with where they don't have that, it makes it difficult, especially if you're hiring people. Today's environment where the demographics have shifted, the workforce is not there anymore. As we know from COVID, all of a sudden people disappeared. It wasn't just a sudden thing. It was happening. It just seemed to all culminate at the same time. And certainly now when we look at the wider world, this is where organizations need to be really good at identifying what they are, what is their identity, and also what are their values, and then finding employees that match with that identity and those values, because those employees are going to want to be there. They're going to want to be part of that organization. They connect with the impact that it's making. And it's become so critical. And I recently, employee retention overtook sales as the number one driver for organizations, which is, it's profound, but it has to happen. When you look at the world today, in China by 2050, its population is going to shrink by 500 million people. And the impact that's going to have on the economy is massive. And this is where we, again, need to evolve and step up. And we will, I believe we will, and change how we operate so we become more integrated as people. We understand what it is that's right for us as people, but we also, as organizations, we help facilitate that within our employees as well. And it's some of the programs that we have that we help people, help organizations actually do that. And it's going to become more and more prevalent as we move forward.
Yeah, I mean, we look at this from a big picture, an organizational standpoint. I'm going to actually bring together two concepts that we've talked about here. So you gave the example earlier of the video game analogy, right? Collecting the coin and then the next coin doesn't mean as much. Now you need two coins or whatever, right? To get the same thing. Exactly. And then we also talk about this idea of identity. And I know, as someone who for a long time worked in retail, corporate environments, where you're getting told from up above you, oh, this is our company culture. This is what we do. This is our identity. But you're then seeing people make decisions that are based on those dopamine hits. Oh, we had one coin last time. Now we need two. Now we need three. Now we need four. And those things conflict with each other, because what people start to do is they start chasing after that feeling of something and they start to abandon. And I think that's really what has led to that current situation that you're talking about, where people aren't around, or people aren't wanting to work at jobs, or they're not sticking around with jobs, because at some point people really got tired of feeling like, hey, it doesn't really matter what I do, right? I'm just a cog in the machine. No one actually cares about me. You've got companies out there going, oh no, our culture, we care about our employees, but your actions aren't showing it. Because when I don't get you your dopamine hit, when sales don't go up over last year, all of a sudden, I'm a bad person. I'm not doing my job. And so people now are like, hey, I'm out of here. I'm going to go somewhere where I am appreciated.
The appreciation is a really big factor in life, with your relationships, personal relationships, and in business as well. And appreciation is something that's certainly not implemented enough in organizations. And what you're talking about there too, it happens a lot where it is the thing to do to have, you know, have a mission statement. There was, you know, many years ago, there wasn't mission statements, but then it became the thing to have. And then it became, okay, we've got to have values and then we've got to have this. And a lot of companies did that. They went and got it, and they went in a manual, and it sat on a desk on a shelf and collected dust. Mm-hmm. And that's part of how that operation needs to work. And that's where, again, one of the key things that we bring in the consulting organization that I have to companies is we bring together a combination of micro learnings, social learnings, and gamification, tapping into that Mario principle, and also tapping into that dopamine principle of when you make learning social, all of a sudden you're not raising the baseline because it's social interaction. And the micro is really important because we do have short attention. We've all been to a lecture and we've sat there and we're falling asleep halfway through because come on, move it on. And we know the brain doesn't work that way. We know after a certain period of time, we need to have a break, let it integrate and move forward. And that's how, with our consulting, that we bring those three together, the micro, the social, and the gamification, so that we have the learning that where people are feeling that appreciation, but it's not in a way where you've got to constantly be raising the bar because of that social connection, where we know dopamine is released in the same level when we have those connections. Again, when you say, I love you to your partner 20 years into a marriage, you still get that same feeling. Obviously, if it's a good marriage, if it's not a good marriage, it might be slightly different. But let's put that proviso in there. And there's a lot of people that have, whether it's a marriage or not, think of a lasting friendship that you had when you say g'day, or give your friend a hug. It's the same hug and it has the same impact.
Yeah.
So when you integrate those three, the micro, the social, and the gamification in a corporate environment, and you do this well, all of a sudden you've got this wonderful interaction with the the employees, with the organization, with the customers, and with the wider impact to the world, which is another area to tap into. And a lot of organizations miss that. It's not just about the widget that you sell, but it's what does that widget do for the wider world? And when you tap into that and share that, all of a sudden it creates a whole new dynamic for everybody, and everybody's well-being goes up.
The way you're describing this, it makes me actually think of, I don't know if you're familiar with the book by Donald Miller, Story Brand.
No, I haven't read that one.
He talks in there about, and it's mostly about marketing, but he talks in there about the hero's journey, right? Which is a popular writing technique. And what he says that stands out to me is, a lot of times, business owners, when they're doing their marketing, they make themselves the hero. Mm-hmm. And now you're a hero and you're talking to this customer who also wants to be a hero. And you're trying to convince them that you should work together. And they're basically going and looking at you and going, okay, hey, man, that's cool. You're a hero. I'm a hero. We're doing our own thing. Good luck with that. And they move on. Because they want to be the hero in their story. They don't want you to be the hero. They want you to be the wise sage for them, right? Yeah. And I feel like when we talk about organizations, a lot of times the people at the top, they're implementing policies, they're doing things that kind of make them the hero. And at the same time, they're trying to sell to the employees that they can also be the hero. And it's like, it doesn't work that way because now both are trying to basically fill the same role. If you are an organization, you have to find ways to reward your employees. Like you talk about the gamification. The gamification is not for the upper level management people. It's for the people that are down on the ground level, right? It's helping them get the dopamine hit. It's about helping them to find enjoyment and pleasure in what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And part of that process is shifting that focus. And we've heard it so many times, and this comes back to life being simple, is that when you're interacting with someone, Dale Carnegie talked about it, you talk about them, you ask them questions. Asking questions, getting in the habit of asking questions and listening, that just changes the dynamic of relationships. When you're, especially if you're in sales and you're going, oh, I'm great and everything's great and we've got this great product and it's all going to be great and aren't we great and you should buy us because we're great.
Yeah.
People just tune out.
Yeah, that's great.
We're so much more sophisticated now. People are very smart. Mm-hmm. And if you're listening to them, all of a sudden they're more engaged because you're showing that you care about them. It's not about you. You care about them. And what you're talking about there is, again, with the employees, it's here creating an environment where you're caring about, you're actually legitimately caring, not lip service, but you're caring about them, going, hey, what is important to you? And this sets up that proviso as well, that when you have a recruitment process, and that's part of, our Breathing Fire program, where we have a recruitment process, not Breathing Fire Dragons. It's all about how to create a great employment relationship. And it starts at the very beginning because, and this is a personal lesson that I learned too late in life, was that no amount of skill fixes a poor partner choice. You need to be very careful how you set up identifying what are the right people to work with. That's not to say people are bad people, but sometimes people are just not a fit. Not everyone's a fit together. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. So you want to be finding people that connect with your impact that you're making, and very few companies even focus on their impact, but you want to identify what is the impact you're making and find people that connect with that impact. And then you come down to value. So impact is right at the top. Mm-hmm. Then values, and those values drive that impact. Your mission then is under that as well. So it's all filtered down, but it's having that process of working through, have I found the right person to have this relationship with? Which is what you're wanting. You're wanting a long-term relationship. You're not aiming to hire someone and then they disappear within 12 months. And where this gets distorted in organizations is in the outgoing interview. They'll organize that. Oh, why did you leave? Oh, I got more money. And that's a common response. And it's the easy response because you don't want to say, hey, this was a shitty working environment. People don't want to say that. They're not going to say that. Oh, and so they shift that somewhere else.
Yeah.
But the mere fact that they were looking in the first place, they weren't. Very few people started a career and looking at that and then get dissatisfied and go, oh, I need more money. We do want that. But we're not looking to shift to a different organization because there's a higher level of risk in doing that. It's the grass is greener. We know inherently that the grass may not be green. There's a good chance the grass isn't greener on the other side. It's much easier to stay where we are. Yeah. But we get to the point where we're so dissatisfied with the environment that we start looking. And then when we look, we go, oh, actually, I can get more money too. And the jump is made. But that's all that's recorded is, oh, it was more money. Yeah. The reality was it was a crappy working environment that actually encouraged them to want to look. So if you're listening to the employees, creating an environment that creates this harmonious relationship with the proviso that you're hiring people, the right people to start with,
yep.
Then all of a sudden you have this wonderful ecosystem where it's all working very smoothly and people are satisfied to be there. They want to be there and they want to interact with others.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so much of what you just said is so helpful for people to hear, right? Because this applies across life, right? Whether we're talking about you're building a business, you're creating some kind of community or club, you're choosing a spouse, right? No matter what area of your life you're talking about, surrounding yourself with the right people who align with your values, your goals, the things that you think are important, those are the things that are going to help you be happy in life. When you are, when you're surrounded with people who are conflicting with you all the time, like you're never going to be happy with that.
100%. And you also need to be realistic too, that a lot of times when we're hiring employees or dating, we set up an environment which creates a false sense of reality. We create this wonderful thing and go, isn't this wonderful and all that kind of, think of the first couple of dates you've gone on. You project this wonderful persona and you create an environment where everything's going to be perfect. But life doesn't work that way. What you really want to find, I love the comedian, I can't remember the comedian's name, but talk about if you really want to find someone's true character, give them slow internet. And if you're dealing with that kind of frustration, so you want to find out, how does this person deal with stress? What actually happens when things aren't going so well? And it can be, you might be in a personal situation, you might be meeting someone for a date and something comes up and you're going to be 15, 20 minutes late and you call them up and say, hey, I'm just going to be late, apologize, I'll be there. How do they react to that? And similar for sales is a great one for hiring sales employees. People create this wonderful relationship. Come and talk with us. And they create this all touchy-feely type thing. And then they hire the person and wonder why they're not succeeding.
Yeah.
If you're hiring a salesperson, the first thing you do is say, hey, I don't think you're as good as you say you are. You're probably not right for the role. How are they going to respond? Because that's the reaction they're going to get in the real world. What person, salesperson calls up an organization, they say, oh, thank you for calling. Isn't it wonderful? I'm so glad you called. It doesn't work that way. So you really want to test in a real world environment, what are these people like, whether it's personal relationship or whether it's business? Are we a fit? Are we going to deal, are we a fit and are we going to deal with real world situations? Can you deal with real world situations? And it's the same token on the other side as an employee. If you're looking for work, you want to be testing the company.
Yeah.
How are they going to look after you? What are the things there? Test them. Because if they're projecting this persona, but they're not really doing it, do you really want to work with them?
Yeah.
And as an employee, you want to test that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I just want to point out, I appreciate the fact that in your fake dating scenario that you did not give any excuses. You just like, hey, I'm late. I'll be there.
And that's the principle. This is the thing we don't with my son growing up. And I spent a lot of time encouraging him to make his own decisions. But there were certain times in as far as father-son relationship, I'm the father, I'm the boss. Mm-hmm. There's certain times where we've said, this is what we're doing and we need to do that.
Yep.
And it was never a why.
Yeah.
Maybe early on he might have said why, and I just said because I said so. There's no, and I liken that. I'm a bit of a sci-fi geek, and I love Captain Janeway, is one of my favorite leaders, fictional leaders. And there was a number of times within the Star Trek Voyager episodes where she would assess and do things, and then she would say, okay, now we're doing this. And someone would interject something, says, maybe later, but I've made the decision, we're going this way. And that was it. It was final. Yeah. And as a leader, you need to be able to do that. There's a certain point where you listen, but there's a certain point where you say, this is where we're going. And that's where it's important too, to have the right team around you that understands you've made the decision and they support and go in that direction. Whether they agree with it or not, it's irrelevant, but it's part of that ecosystem that needs to work.
And it sure is a lot easier to get people to go along with those decisions when you've shown them that you truly care.
100%. 100%. Yep. And it's one of those things of finding that right relationship. Again, it comes back to that no amount of skill fixes a poor partner choice.
Yep.
When as a leader, if you're a leader of an organization, you need to be very careful about the people that you choose to work with. They need to be supportive of what you want. They also need to have a diversity around it. One of my best friends is my manager, because I'm quite entrepreneurial, and I'll come up with these harebrained ideas. And I also joke that, because I'm a Leo rat from as far as Western and Eastern star signs go, so for me, it's all shiny thing over there, and I'll go that way. But I know I can do that. And my friend, he's more managerial, more down to earth. So this time to time, I'll chat with him about something. Hey, talk about this. And he'll talk through the practicalities of it. And I will listen to that. Sometimes I'll still go and do it anyway. But other times I'll take on board that and adjust what I'm doing, because I've got that reality check. And that's where it's important to surround yourself with people that actually are going to give you diverse advice. But it needs to be in line with where you're going as well. And that's the balance you need to find. It's not just people that have alternate opinions, because that might not serve you. They might be destructive to where you want to go.
Yeah.
You want people that are going to give you reflective advice that's helping you get where you want to go.
Yeah. You want people around you who can help you see things from a different perspective, not necessarily people who are trying to change your perspective.
Yeah, to open up, okay, what are the areas that you've missed? Where are the blind spots? Because you're so focused on where you're going. And again, that comes back to that knowledge and learning. You have to be willing to let go. So there might be parts of you where you go, okay, actually, I need to let go of this component. Does that fit? And then you can check back in and go, actually, that I hear what you're saying there, but I don't think that's as a critical risk, and move forward that way.
Yeah. Like, for example, when you do a podcast interview like this, what we're really doing is we're having a conversation. We're putting our perspectives out there. We're talking about what we feel, what we've seen, what we've experienced. And somebody might be listening to this and they might be getting some perspective shifts. They might say, you know what? I never thought about it that way. I haven't looked at it that way. And then that person may decide, hey, you know what? That's something I want to implement. And now they reach out to you and they say, hey, I want to work with you. And they can get into your programs, your coaching or whatever, and you can help them to implement those things. Or they may listen to it and go, those guys don't know what their world they're talking about. and that's okay too. If you think that we were just full of hot air, I don't. If you feel that way, that's fine. I won't take it personally. But I think that's something that's important to recognize too, because a lot of times we surround ourselves with people who are yes men, so to speak, that never challenge any of our perspectives. Or some people go the opposite route and they think that it's growth to surround you with people who always disagree with you. And while that can help you grow, it can also, as you pointed out earlier, be destructive. It's about finding that balance.
That's right. And that's where that woke mentality went way out of control, where people, as soon as someone challenged their identity, that was then, we need to cancel that. It was just very destructive and certainly not a growth mentality. Yeah. And that's the whole point that we want in life, is we want to listen to different points of view. It doesn't mean we agree with it. You don't have to agree with everything. And certainly I have very close friends where we have very different opinions on things, but we can still have a discussion about things. And there's some things we don't need to have a discussion. We know we disagree, but that doesn't affect how our relationship is in other areas. And we can completely disagree. And also too, we can learn things and be open to things. I'm back when I was young, there was a number of terrorist hijackings, and it was generally someone from Iran hijacking a plane. And I grew up with the mentality of Iranians being terrorists. And one of my business partners now is from Iran. Him and his family moved out from there to Australia. And it's been fascinating for me having this, I'm going to say core belief, but it's probably a bit strong, but this belief of what these people were like, and now working together, understanding and learning about the Persian culture, and noticing that there are so many similarities. You know, he cares about his family, he wants good things for his daughter, take care of his wife, all those kind of things that I connect with. And then learning about the diversity of the Persian culture and how they deal with things and how they have food festivals and the different foods, and I like food, and just all these different flavors. It was just fascinating. And then that helped me become more powerful because I've got a broader range of knowledge to choose from, and also more ability to work with people because I've, again, got the broader, because now I can talk to other people from the Persian culture and actually relate to them because I have that understanding. So it's created, given me so much more power to be able to get things done that I want to get done.
Yeah. And I think that's a really great way to wrap up here, where you just brought this idea full circle that you had a belief based on information that was available to you early in life. And yeah. You shifted that belief, you changed it because new information became available to you. And that's, I think, really just the overarching theme of what we talked about today, is that you don't have to be stuck with what you've always done. If it's not working for you anymore, or you get new information, be open to looking for new ways of doing things. It might just make life easy.
It certainly does. And the shift that needs to happen is rather going, I'm this type of person, and making your identity about that. Yep. Shift the focus to what it is that you want to achieve. What is the goal that you've got in front of you? When that becomes, okay, I want to achieve this. Now, how can I do it?
Yep.
And I'm very flexible in, I'm a ball of energy. My identity is not my behaviors. So how can I adjust to do that without throwing in excuses or reasons why you can't do it? Just go, this is where I'm going, and how can I get there? As fast as possible. If you add that little component, as fast as possible, all of a sudden these doors open and it becomes very smooth, and life becomes easy and very simple.
Yeah. Love it, man. Love it. Damien, if you would real quick share with us how people can get a hold of you.
Yeah. I'm available through LinkedIn, through my website. There's an update coming, although I'm not sure when this is going to air, but there's an update coming there. You can connect with me there as well. I have the podcast Growing Revenue and Profit podcast, which is very business focused, and have some great interviews on there with business people. And also, you know, tips and advice as well about how to run business. And then I also have the share.care podcast, which is SHAIR.care, and where we have What is Manly and eShare, which is about equality. So there's a number of banners under that, and we get together with some friends and have a bit of a ponder as well on different topics. But Share.care is a global organization sharing experience, strength, and hope to create strong, healthy, and inspiring relationships, hence the acronym. And so you can connect with me at that podcast as well. But generally, if you put Damien Andrews into any search engine, you will find a link to me. Most of the links on the front page will be me. So my SEO is working very well. So but reach out, connect. I'd love to chat with people and learn what they're doing. And certainly from a business perspective, our consulting works very well. We get tremendous results. Smaller organizations. We took a company that was turning over $8 million to $25 million in 18 months through COVID, and they didn't work any harder. They made a simple shift, and it just profoundly changed their business operations. And that's the kind of thing that my focus is more on business, but I do like to help work with people as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And if you're somebody who's out there and you have a business or organization and you want to continue to make things difficult on yourself and make life hard, then call somebody else. But if you want to make things a little easier, call Damien.
Exactly. And I have this philosophy, and I teach my clients that as well, is if you have difficult clients, you refer them to your competition. It makes life easier.
Well, Damien, once again, I just wanted to say thank you for coming on today. Loved our conversation. Also, just encourage people, check out the What is Manly podcast episode. I was on there. So I'll put links to that as well in the description for this podcast in the show notes. So that way people can check out both conversations. And as always, guys, I want to remind you that while none of us are born unshakable, we can all become unshakable.
Thank you for listening to the Unshakable Habits podcast with Coach Stephen Box. Be sure to hit the subscribe button and help us spread the word by sharing the podcast with other men. If you're ready to create unshakable habits, you can learn more and connect with us at unshakablehabits.com.